Become a buddy. It's really easy. Just go to givetowbai.org, become a sustaining member, help keep WBAI afloat during this pandemic. If you listen to programs here on WBAI, then please consider supporting WBAI. Become a monthly sustaining member for $10 or more a month, whatever you can afford. Thank you so much. WBAI can't do it without you because we're listener-sponsored. We're non-corporate, non-commercial, and we depend on listeners like you going to the phone, taking the initiative, going to the phone, calling 516-620-3602, 516-620-3602. Say you want to become a WBAI buddy, a sustaining member, in the name of your favorite show or in the name of all WBAI programs. It may seem like a ghost town, but in reality, WBAI is broadcasting, you're listening, and we're a community radio station coming together at 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org.
Thank you for that, Linda Perry. Good afternoon, WBAI listeners. It's now 1 minute after 12 o'clock. Time right now is, yes, 12:01. Apologies. Get ready for your next show. It's going to be Coping with COVID, starring Sri Srinivasan, coming up next.
Hello, everyone. It's a beautiful, sunny day in New York City. It's 74 degrees Fahrenheit, 23 degrees Celsius, and we're listening to that song that we've been playing for 10 weeks on this show, Coping with COVID-19, a helpful, hopeful call-in show. My name is Sri Srinivasan. We're so grateful to everyone who's called in and to all of our guests. Thank you for supporting WBAI 99.5 FM, listener-supported progressive radio here in New York City and worldwide on WBAI.org. On this show, we discuss various aspects of the crisis, but we'll focus on its effects on society's most vulnerable, the workers, the poor, the marginalized, and talk to ordinary citizens and experts. Let's learn together. A little bit about my background. I host daily shows about COVID-19 on my YouTube channel, Srinet, S-R-E-E-N-E-T, and I'm the Marshall Loeb Visiting Professor of Digital Innovation at Stony Brook University and someone who spent 25 years working at iconic New York City institutions. I was the Chief Digital Officer of Columbia, then the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and then the city itself, working in the basement of City Hall. All three of those NYC icons, like millions of New Yorkers, have been disrupted as never before. Our beloved city has become the U.S. epicenter of the crisis, the world epicenter, and the face of what can happen in the rest of the country. We're calling the show Helpful and Helpful so that we can emerge stronger, and emerge we will, but we're not going to pretend everything is fine like someone we know in D.C. We're going to be clear-eyed and share factual, useful information and stories throughout the show. This past week, we've seen lots of anger in our nation, and for good reason. Protests have occurred all over the country in light of police brutality, specifically the murder of George Floyd. People are fed up, and we won't remain silent anymore. Our show today can help some of us come to terms with the state of our nation today. Please call in and share your thoughts. 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877, or email me, sri@sri.net, sree@sree.net. Who's been helpful to you? How have you been helpful to others? Share a story, share a tip, call in now. We have a two-hour show, and we have two fabulous guests. In the first hour, Dr. Gina Pagnotta is with us, a psychologist and social media psychology expert. She will help us understand some of what's been happening online. For our second hour, we have Professor Kimberly Crenshaw, professor at Columbia Law School, here to discuss the stark racial implications of the epidemic and what is happening right now in our country. She's the one who coined the term intersectionality. She's been a guest on our show before, and she gave us great insight into racial issues in our nation. And so we've asked her to come back. She'll be here in the 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern hour. We're now at the top of the show at 12:05 Eastern, and we have with us Dr. Gina Pagnotta. She's a psychologist and social media expert. And let's talk to her and say hi, Dr. Pagnotta.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for having me.
We start every episode by asking, how are you? Where are you? How's your family, your circle of friends and others?
Yeah, thanks for asking. I am doing well. I've been in New York this whole time in Brooklyn. So it's been really interesting to be here throughout it all and kind of see the way that things have transformed over the past 10 weeks. Luckily, everybody in my family and close circle has been staying healthy and safe, so I'm grateful for that. And just been, working from home, doing telemental health sessions, and that's pretty much it.
And we want to talk a lot about the work you're doing and take questions from our audience about mental health issues and how to address them. But I want to start with the crisis at hand. Everything that's happening, or you're watching on TV, you're listening on the radio, I am so angry and so upset, as I know so many people are. Millions of people are upset. And we have so many issues to talk about, so many incidents to talk about. The death and murder of George Floyd is just one of them, unfortunately. And we want to get your thoughts, Doctor, about how we should be thinking about this and how are you thinking about this?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And I think that overall, you know, even before the death of George Floyd, what everybody has been dealing with is just a massive amount of trauma on the micro level for anything that's what's been going on in your own families, to really just the macro level of that sense of grieving and loss for what the whole world is going through in light of the pandemic. So, you know, the anger that you expressed, I think, is a natural reaction to, of course, the, you know, the death of George Floyd and everything that, all of these injustices that have been happening. And I think on the heels of also all of that trauma and loss, it's important to recognize why it would be hitting especially hard. So I think in the way that I think about it is first and foremost kind of like giving ourselves...
Doctor, are you with us?
Yes.
Okay, we may have lost Dr. Pagnotta. We hope she will be able to call back in. Otherwise, our...
She's here.
Oh, she's here? Okay. Hi, yeah. Doc.
Hi, sorry, did you lose me?
Yes, we missed the last bit of what you said, so could you repeat it? And then I have a couple of questions for you.
Sure. I was saying, you know, the way that I've been thinking about it for myself and for everybody who is coping with this is kind of to give ourselves self-compassion for whatever reactions are happening right now, whether that's anger, rage, sadness. It's all, you know, it's all normal and valid given everything that's happening.
And what do you say to us as we are watching television and getting progressively more angry about these incidents as they add up, the various murders of individuals across the country, the way in which the systemic racism is making us all just so upset? How do we deal with that? What are some effective ways to cope with the anger we are feeling?
Well, I mean, I guess I would be curious to ask you, you know, when you're watching it and when you're dealing with this anger, what do you personally find is like the most difficult part of it? You know, when you're watching all these shows and you're taking in all this news, is there a particular piece of it that is, you know, a sticking point?
No, it's just the anger that you feel. You know, you think back every time there's one of these incidents, you think back to all the other incidents that you are familiar with, and you just feel so helpless. And here we are in 2020 America, and we know that the racial divide, the inequality, all of it is already a burden so much on our people of color. And then on top of that, you have the economic crisis that's happening, the health crisis that's happening, and all of it just makes you feel so helpless. Even before this, we saw that a disproportionate of African Americans are being affected by the health crisis. We saw that states with 15%, 20% African American populations are having 70%, 80% of their of the people with the illness are African American. So when you see that, when you see what happened in Central Park, an African American man goes out to do some bird watching, and a white woman says to him that she will not listen to his very reasonable suggestion that the dog that she's walking should not be brought into the area where the birds are, where the bird watchers are. She decides that the right thing to do is to call the police. And then on top of that, to keep using the word African-American man, African-American man, African-American man. It's so upsetting to see that. We saw that Denzel Washington was driving in Los Angeles and stepped out of the car and helped resolve a situation where a homeless person was the situation was resolved, as they said, without violence when the LAPD came. But it shouldn't take a celebrity of Denzel's stature to have a situation resolve itself. So all of these are just adding up, and then you can think of the others in the last decade of situations. So please tell me how I should feel, how I should be thinking about this. Of course, you can't tell me how to feel, but tell me what my, even as I'm talking now, Dr. Pagnotta, I'm getting more and more angry.
Yeah, no, I can hear that. And I mean, all of the, everything you just said, all of the rage and all of the anger, that is warranted, I would say, given the situation. I mean, it is infuriating. It's unjust. It's all of the above. And what you're experiencing is just like, I think, what a lot of people are experiencing right now, which is this feeling or this sense of everything being so bad and so ugly, and yet, as you said, feeling helpless. And I think that feeling of helplessness is probably at the heart of what has been going on in this country for the past, you know, not just only during the pandemic, but for years and years, this has been building. So I guess whenever you're, you know, hitting up against this sense of helplessness, it can lead to an anger, because there's this immense frustration of wanting things so badly to be different, and yet also not really knowing how to implement that change. So I do think that everybody deals with those feelings in different ways. You know, some people are taking to the streets and rioting and taking action. Not everybody has that, you know, ability to do that. So I think the one thing that I could recommend, you know, I wish there was a way to say this is how to help it, this is how to fix it, to do exactly what you're doing right now and just talk about it. You know, talk about these feelings, talk about what it brings up, and start these conversations, because that's really the only thing we can do right now.
Thank you very much, Dr. Pagnotta. Folks, you're listening to Coping with COVID-19, a helpful, hopeful call-in show. I'm your host, Sri Srinivasan. Please tweet us at Sri, S-R-E-E, at W-B-A-I, and the hashtag W-B-A-I-S-R-E-E, W-B-A-I, Sri. Our phone number is 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. In this noon hour, we have Dr. Gina Pagnotta with us, and she is talking about mental health issues. And then in the 1 p.m. Eastern hour, we'll be talking to Professor Kimberly Crenshaw, professor at Columbia Law School, who will discuss the stark racial implications of everything that we're discussing here today and everything we've been dealing with. So, Dr. Pagnotta, maybe we start with your telling us a little bit about your own work and the institutions you're affiliated with, and how did you come to practice what is also, you became an expert in social media psychology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I currently work at a therapy practice in Williamsburg in Brooklyn, and I started this journey to become a psychologist, about in undergrad. I was a psychology major, and then for the past 8 years, I've been training at various mental health practices and institutions around New York City, you know, anywhere from the private school, public school system to public New York City hospitals, community mental health centers. And during that time, one thing that I really noticed was just this mounting presence of social media in our lives in general, and then the real overlap between as social media took hold and as these technologies became a bigger and bigger part of our lives, I saw it increasingly coming to play with my patients and with my therapy practice. So that's kind of where I am now, of studying that interplay between technology in our lives and then mental health, which I think is extremely at the forefront now, given everything that's happening.
Thank you, Dr. Pagnotto. Folks, we want you to call in, and we have some callers standing by before we go to them. Dr. Pagnotto, just tell me how you yourself use technology. Are you on social media yourself on a personal capacity? Are you Instagramming? Are you Facebooking? Mm-hmm. Talk about that.
Yeah, so the reason I became interested in this partly in the first place is because I'm of the generation that kind of came of age as, you know, Facebook became invented and as everyone started getting smartphones. So I kind of remember a time before it all, you know, when we were still using landlines and we didn't even have internet in our homes. And yet, just as I was kind of coming of age, I was the first generation to almost seamlessly adapt into that. So, you know, I do have Facebook. I do have Instagram. I used it, you know, throughout my own, coming of age, if you will. And currently, it's kind of tricky as a professional, mental health professional, because on one hand, we're encouraged to keep a more, you know, private life in a way and not disclose too much. And yet there's also this pull to promote oneself on social media. So I do try to toe that line in my own life. So I have Instagram, and yet I try to practice what I preach and not be completely addicted to it and not be completely overtaken by it. But it's hard.
Thank you, Doc. We have multiple callers on the line, and if you're calling us, we know the lines will be busy, so please be patient. Let's go to our first caller. You're on the air on WBAI. Please tell us where you're calling from and your name, please.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
My name is Evelina. I'm calling from Long Island near Huntington, and it's ironic that I just caught you. I used to listen every Saturday morning, but what I wanted to say is I'm 70, and I've been mostly staying home. Even though I'm a doctor, I don't have a job where I can safely work, but in the last few days, I've just kept checking in because I have family in Minneapolis and because the whole thing. And I said, and a few other people that I am friends with on Facebook were saying, we wish there was a way we could protest and express our opinions, but that we would feel safe. And lo and behold, somebody picked a corner, and I just went there for a little over an hour. There weren't a ton of people, but the people who were there were great. There were a lot of signs. There was some conversation in between when cars were driving by on a pretty busy street. Everybody was wearing masks, and it was the best feeling I've had in, I don't know, maybe 2 months, I think. And, you know, it was, I think there's in activism, which has been part of my life since I was really young, there's a thing of just being around people with whom you have points of agreement, but being able to converse about it. And, God, it's really more fun face-to-face than in front of a computer.
So I feel really blessed and lucky that I had this experience today, and you know, that I was in a place where we were able to pull that together just by, you know, three people telling our friends and them telling their friends. So I just wanted to thank you for having this show. I think it's really important, and I will listen again.
Very kind. Thank you very much, and thank you for your service as a doctor, and good luck out on Long Island. You are absolutely right that sometimes stepping away from the computer and getting involved in real life, something we've missed now for almost 80 days here in New York, is the way to go. But please be safe as you do it. And I want our doctor's reaction to the other doctor who called in. Go ahead, Dr. Gina Pagnotta.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that story. I think that what struck me the most was, you know, you mentioning that once you maybe took a small step to connect with community members and to almost feel like there was something you can do, there was some way that you could connect with people, it seemed like that was in and of itself healing. So I do think that that is a great thing to keep in mind in thinking about this, of what are the things that you can control and what are some of the smaller things that you can do to start to get back in touch with those parts of our lives that we've actually, you know, become completely disconnected from. So I appreciate you sharing that. I'm happy to hear that that was helpful.
Thank you, Doc. Let me go to another caller. Folks, we want you to dial in 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. Talk to us. Ask the doctor a question. She is a psychologist who specializes in social media psychology. And you are now on the air, caller. Tell us where you're calling from and your name, please.
Hi, it's White Plains. It's Russell again, three. I'd like to make clear I am all for citizen massive resistance. It's the only way to address police misconduct. The legal system here in the United States never will. The only way to deter the police is to do this. But I have to disagree with Dr. Gina. Just talking is not the only thing we can do. If we want to connect, go out in the street. Put down your screen. Go out in the street. And Sri, you know, the thing with the Kawasaki and the children and the dogs wearing the mask, these are dog whistles. And usually I think of when you say the white Trumpists who are protesting the mask, and they don't care about blacks. I consider that really racist. But now I'm seeing that that, along with the Karen factor, that woman who called the police on the dog burger, this is making women, white women, realize what they're up to. And I don't think we should underestimate pent-up female sexuality when it's being released after 3 months. There's no shutting it up. Women are overcompensating. And I'd like to ask the doctor if it's appropriate for me to plead for all the white sisters out there who have found that feminism is not incompatible with white supremacy, throw your bodies into the gears of the machine. Thank you very much. And one more thing. Poor George Floyd's death is causing us to throw off these shackles of these masks. And three, I want to ask you one thing. Can you ever envision yourself saying you've been wrong about this whole thing? All right. Thanks very much.
Okay. There's a lot going on there, Dr. Pagnotta. I will just say to everybody that, you know, this is the point of a call-in show. We have different voices. We have people calling in. We have people who we will disagree with, people who will say offensive things. And that is part of a call-in show in New York City. That's what makes New York City the greatest city on earth. But I will also admit when I am wrong. But throughout the 10 weeks of the show, we have said stay home. We have said respect the science, respect the medical information, respect and salute our first responders, salute and respect our teachers, salute and respect our nurses and doctors and our delivery workers and our grocery store clerks who are making it possible for those of us who are quarantining to do so. And I have called out repeatedly the armed white protesters who went on to Capitol state houses around the country and demanded that they have the right to immediately get a haircut, immediately go to tattoo parlors, immediately do what they want. And you would have noticed in those protests, there were almost no African Americans, almost no minorities. That was the white privilege at roaring back and pushing back against science. It was ignorance pushing back against science. Doctor, what say you?
Well, I think that I wanted to, you know, make one thing clear when I said we should talk about it. By no means did I mean that's all we should do. You know, of course, talking only gets you so far. What I was trying to point out was to your question about, well, what can we do with this anger? Some people who have the ability to take action should. I do think that we need action right now. We need action. That's exactly what we need. And yet, with the emotions and the feeling side of it, talking about it and sharing with each other, I mean, just as you're providing this forum for this radio show, I think was the point that I was making, is that we can only get to a place where we can come together and do something to make a change if we're in touch with those feelings and being vocal about them. So that's kind of one thing I will say.
Thank you, Doctor. Tell us about the effect of this pandemic on your patients. How are they dealing with it? What are some of the questions that keep coming up? Obviously, being respectful of their privacy, what are some of the common things that are coming up?
Well, yeah, it's interesting because this is actually, you know, this is the first time as a therapist that pretty much all of my patients and myself are dealing with a shared kind of trauma and crisis of this magnitude. So what I have seen is pretty much like themes, you know, as the weeks pass on, of these emotions that people are seeming to transition between. So where we started with a more anxiety and acute panic state kind of has transformed over the weeks to some grief, some loss, some anger. And currently, I think what people are dealing with is uncertainty. By and large, you know, this week, I've just heard so many people saying, what's going to happen here? What is my life going to look like? What is the world going to look like? Even uncertainty over, is it okay to start to break social distancing? You know, is it okay to see my family member who I haven't seen in months? So a lot of questions right now. And then, of course, with everything happening in the news, George Floyd, a huge surge of anger and even more uncertainty of, well, what are we supposed to do right now?
Thank you, folks. You're listening to a conversation on coping with COVID-19, a helpful, hopeful call-in show with Dr. Gina Pagnotta, who's with us. We're very grateful to her for her time. Let us now go to another caller. You're on the air on WBAI.
Yes, hello. This is Edna.
Hello, go ahead. What is your question, please?
I don't have a question. I have a comment
about
what's going on with black people. They are getting killed, and they don't have no weapons on them. The cops that are killing them, they need to be prosecuted. The officers need to be prosecuted. It has to stop. And as far as the president, it's starting from him, from day one when he was elected. He is the worst president ever, and he's setting bad examples. That's why this is continually happening. There was a case a while ago, a black elderly woman protesting in Louisville, and a white officer was choking her by the neck because she was saying she can't breathe. How dare he? He also needs to be prosecuted. The cops that are killing black people and they don't have any weapons on them, they are continuously getting paid and fired. No, they commit a crime, they need to be prosecuted. They need to go to jail, just like anybody else when they kill someone.
Thank you, caller. I'm sorry that the audio was going in and out, but we hear you. and we hear your pain. We hear your anger. I am so upset at the President of the United States, traditionally a role where no matter how much you disagreed with him, whoever he was, you understood that he was the leader of this country. At times of trouble, we came together, including during 9/11, including during Hurricane Katrina. We came together. We looked for leadership. When we found it wanting, we called it out. And now every day, the new normal has been him normalizing racism, white supremacy, lying, disregard for science. All of that is so upsetting. And I hear that pain in your voice. And I want to say that a lot of what has happened is because of him, but it is not all because of him. White supremacy, white nationalism is a problem and a curse of this country, and we have to tackle it in the 1 p.m. hour. In half an hour, we'll be joined by Professor Kimberly Crenshaw at Sandy Locks on Twitter. She's the one who coined the term intersectionality. She has amazing insights into what is happening in the African-American community, what's happening in the white community, and she'll be sharing it with us. So please stay tuned. Please call in and ask her questions as well. She's coming up in about 30 minutes. Let me ask Dr. Gina Pagnotta to just respond to that pain you're hearing and how those of us who are not African American, what can we say to folks who are, who live this pain every day? Even myself, I'm a person of color, but I know the immense advantages I have in this country. This nation has blessed me, but this nation thinks of me when they look at me as someone of privilege, someone who they give me the benefit of the doubt, let me say, most of the time, not always after 9/11, but people who look like me get the benefit of the doubt. That's not true of African Americans. I'd love to hear what you think.
Yeah, no, I also hear that pain and anger, and I think that right now, you know, it's really important for people of other races, white people especially, to not, you know, make any assumptions about the experiences of people of other races, of how it is for them. And not, you know, most importantly, not to minimize that pain that African Americans are feeling right now, because that is real. And as you mentioned, this isn't, you know, this president has certainly made things worse, but this has been going on for far longer than that. And so I think that being allies is so important, and not just being allies of saying, you know, I understand you, I'm here for you, but really kind of trying to join and understand the experiences of everybody who's going through this right now, because that is, you know, there's nothing that any one person can say to make them feel better. It's not really about that. It's about this sense of not being alone in it and not continuing to cause this pain on one another that's been perpetuated for so long. Hello?
If you're listening to Coping with COVID-19, we have multiple callers on hold and we have people dialing in. We are so grateful to all of you for participating and supporting WBAI. But before we go to our callers, we need to make sure that we continue to have support for the essential work that WBAI is doing, that progressive voice that you don't see everywhere, that you don't see on television. So we want you to support us, and we have a message for you right now from WBAI.
To my New York City fam, strong, resilient, and proud, now more than ever, it's super important that every New Yorker counts. The COVID-19 pandemic is affecting us all, but it's affecting our Black and Brown communities the most. And the only way to get the programs and the funding that we deserve is to fill out the census. It only comes once every 10 years, but the data determines billions of dollars of funding for our hospitals, emergency services, and healthcare programs, which we need now now more than ever. It's just 10 questions, and by law, your information cannot be shared. There are no citizenship questions on the census, and you have a right to be counted regardless of your immigration status. So it's up to us to make sure that New York gets the funding it deserves. Go to my2020census.gov and let's be counted. Sending you so much love.
Whoa, that was Alicia Keys, ladies and gentlemen. And our wonderful engineer, Giovanni, didn't tell me. He would give me a surprise there with Alicia Keys' voice.
Of course, he's got to surprise you.
You do, mm-hmm. And you did great. Thank you so much. That message is so important. Even she was talking about how our black and brown communities are affected disproportionately. And it was not so nice to hear her voice. Everyone, please support WBAI. Please go to givetowbai.org, give2wbai.org, or go to wbai.org, look for that donate button. Donate in the name of this show, Coping with COVID-19, or any of the shows you like. Please support listener-supported radio. The listener supporter is you, and we need you to support us. Become a BAI buddy. And Dr. Pagnotta, that was pretty cool, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love
keys. It was great to hear her voice. Okay, we have other callers on the line. Folks, please tell us where you're calling from, and please tell us your name.
I'm Luella. I'm in Northern California. And I wanted to draw attention to a cappeldridge or a cappella singing. There's one of my favorite hymns that I like to listen to. But it's if you have to look it up, at A-C-A-P-E-L-D-R-I-D-G-E. That's A-C-A-P-E-L-D-R-I-D-G-E. Our God, He is Alive, is the title of the hymn, and it's by Aaron, A-A-R-O-N, Wesley, W-E-S-L-E-Y, Dykus. Aaron Wesley Dykus, and he was born in Festus, Missouri, May 31st of 1888, and he died in 1978, blinded by glaucoma and cataracts. And he was given the name of a scientist with a song. His name, A-A-R-O-N, Aaron Wesley Dykus, that's Wesley, W-E-S-L-E-Y, D-I-C-U-S, and he invented the auto turn signal after becoming a teacher, but he gets credit for writing many hymns, and this one hymn titled Our God, He is Alive is in four stanzas, but it's done in a cappella. But if you put in a cappeldridge,
thank you, caller. We understand this hymn is important to you. Thank you for calling in from Northern California. We appreciate it. Doctor, how do you think of the role of religion at the time of a crisis like this? How are your patients turning to it? Are people coming back to God? Are people turning away? Are they angry? Are they looking for more help?
Yes, I think that part of what this crisis has brought up in large part is this sense of kind of existential dread. So these big questions like, what meaning does my life have? Am I alone? Is there any reason for it all? So in that regard, turning to religion, if that's something that you believe in, and, you know, having a sense of spirituality can be incredibly soothing during this time, because it can be grounding and give you a sense that there is some type of meaning, there is something to believe in. I have found that, you know, not all of my clients are religious people. Not all of them do believe in a higher power. And so it is a struggle to try to make that sense of meaning for themselves.
Thank you, Doctor. Folks, you're listening to a conversation with Dr. Gina Pagnotta, who's an expert on She's a psychologist and expert on social media and psychology, and I have so many questions about that, Doc. We'll go to a caller, but before then, just give us your best advice on dealing with social media.
Yes, my best advice on dealing with social media is it's all about mindful social media use. So by and large, the research shows that it's not social media in general that's all bad. You know, it gets a bad rap for it causes depression, it causes anxiety, you know, it's addictive. All those things can be true, but it's more a function of how you're using social media. So if you're using it in a mindless way where you're kind of scrolling and detaching from your emotions and kind of going down a dark hole, that can really lead to the dark side of social media. That leaves you feeling more lonely, more depressed, more anxious. So I would just say when you're using it, make sure you know why you're using it and how you're feeling when you're using it. And then that's basically the best thing you can do.
Thank you. We have callers on standby, but we're going to take producer's privilege here by having our engineer Giovanni ask you a question.
Okay.
Hi, Dr. Pagnotta. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. So my question for you is, earlier you were discussing that when you were dealing with clients, you were also sharing the effects that COVID-19 has been having on us psychologically. So my question mm-hmm. to you is, what have you been doing to sort of like clear your head? Because as a mm-hmm. psychologist, you know, you have to help others first. So like, how do you help yourself? Do you have a psychologist? I don't know. Do you binge watch television? What do you mm-hmm. do to sort of like clear your mind and allow you to focus on dealing with your clients? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. That's a great question and one that's so important because, you know, first and foremost, if me as a therapist or as a psychologist is not doing self-care, how can I show up and be emotionally available for my clients each week? And I will admit that this time of working from home and, you know, also dealing with the pandemic myself at times has been challenging because I don't have my normal outlets of even, you know, walking to and from the office or having social events to kind of break up my week. So in the first couple of weeks, I did have a moment where I realized I was feeling incredibly drained by being on the screen all day and then not really implementing enough measures to break up, you know, my work-life balance. So what I started to do for myself is try to be really disciplined about, you know, at the end of the workday, taking a set amount of time to just not be on any devices at all. So kind of, I've even gotten to the extreme of asking my partner to kind of like hide my device from me in a different room just so that I can totally detach and do certain things that refresh and rejuvenate myself. But, you know, I will say that it's tricky with, you know, sometimes I'll stop working and then I'll go watch the news and then all of a sudden I'm triggered and dragged into another emotionally, you know, difficult thing. So I think taking walks, to your question, yes, I do have my own therapist. I think a lot of therapists have their own therapist. So I've really been in the last month being more diligent about that because it's so important.
Doctor, one of the things that I've noticed is there is a huge number of people who specialize in psychology in undergrad. You know, they take psychology courses, mm-hmm. Minor or major. Giovanni, our producer, also has a degree in psychology. What do you think is appealing about it when at the same time so many people are also reluctant to even talk to psychologists or talk about their feelings?
Mm-hmm. I think what makes psychology so appealing is, and what actually drew me to it when I was taking that first, you know, Psych 101 class, is that it is so relatable to the human experience. You know, every psychological study or term that I learned, it was so easy to remember because I could just say, oh, yeah, you know, I've experienced that. Oh, yeah, I can see that. I've observed that. And inherently, I think humans are curious to learn more about themselves and to have this, like, lifelong quest to kind of say, well, who am I in this world and how can I relate to those around me? So that's what I think makes it so appealing. But to your point, yeah, some people are very resistant and even scared of what psychology is and what going to therapy even means. I mean, there's such a huge stigma to it, where a lot of time it's seen as a weakness if you do want to go to therapy or if you do see a mental health professional. So part of it is the stigma, but then I think the second piece is that even though we all have this desire to understand and know ourselves better on this deep level, we also are potentially scared of what we might find. So, you know, once you, and I tell this to clients all the time, but once you do start digging around and once you do start opening your mind to that exploration, you kind of have to be vulnerable and give up some degree of control, because you don't know what potentially might come up. You know, not that there's these huge secrets that we all carry, but it's a vulnerable thing. So to take that leap of faith, especially with another person, another therapist, isn't easy. It's not something that is easy to do.
Thank you, Doc. Well, we have a couple of other callers on the line. Let's go to one of them. You're on the air on WBAI. Tell us your name and your question, please.
Hi there. Yes, thank you for taking the call. The name, Laura, from Long Island. Question, I noted you said race, and when I think of the word race, I think of basically a collection of one people or peoples, the human race. Now, if we segment ourselves in the white race, or quote, the black race, or quote, the red, et cetera, we therefore are separating ourselves and establishing a difference that we have to define, when in actuality, if you're human, you are one people. So, question is, in your profession, do you feel, just as in, before I ask the question, I will give another example, a religion, you know? You say, I'm a Protestant, I'm a Methodist, et cetera, et cetera. You believe in one superior, or maybe more than one superior being, entity, that brought forth the greatness that you enjoy in the world. But when you say, I am a Methodist, I am a Catholic, you therefore are drawing a line and basically challenging someone to establish or to clarify or to legitimize their position against your position, and you are trying to legitimize your position against them, not knowing or not taking into consideration that no matter what entity you pray to, if you are coming from a human race perspective, a human race of peoples, then you know the love and goodness is basically what all religion and what all peoples are supposed to possess and live by.
Laura, thank you for your call. We have to start wrapping up. So, Dr. Pagnotta, do you have a thought on that?
I will say that I think that that was very well stated, and I do agree that we are a human race, and there's, you know, above all, a tremendous amount of unity between the human experience and what we all share. So I guess my first reaction is to say, yes, I agree with that, and I actually wish that we could all see things that way, and that a lot of what we're facing now would be easier if we could adopt that mentality.
Thank you. We have a couple more callers, and we have very little time left, so we'll have quick comments from our callers. Please tell us your name. You're on the air on WBAI.
Caller, you're on the air.
Yes. Well, I like to answer whenever I'm asked what my ethnicity is.
I always say the human race. I'm part of the human race, and I'd, I really have a lot to say about.
Thank you. Let's go to another caller. You're on the air on WBAI. Hello, you're on the air.
Caller, you are on the air. Please tell us your name and where you are calling from.
This is Ronald from Fairlawn.
Thank you, Ronald. Tell us your question.
My interest is that there was a great, you know, I was appalled what took place in Milwaukee. But then I was also found that the incident in Central Park should have been made more interesting to people. Our police department did a wonderful job of resolving it. Unfortunately, I don't know the details, but certainly there wasn't some kind of unpleasant, untoward thing. The woman who engaged in this kind of thing was exposed for what she had done, and rightly so. And the gentleman who was victimized by her had an opportunity to see that. And I think that that should also be made part of our communication on the radio, to see that things do sometimes work out, and the police do a good job occasionally. We have racists, there's no question. People who are acting terribly. And this goes in all races, not just white race, so that one should understand that. And I applaud what went on. I wish I had more details as to who resolved the problem and how all the details came out. Little of that has been made public. I don't know why. With that, thank you for listening to me.
Thank you. We have one more caller, I believe. Let's see if we can bring them on.
Oh, no, that was the last call, actually.
Okay, thank you, Giovanni.
You're welcome. All right.
Let's go to Dr. Gina Pagnotta, who's been very patiently sharing her thoughts, sharing her insights. This has been a wonderful hour of healing for me, or at least the start of it, and helping me. I feel like I've been on your couch, Doc. Do you have a couch in your office?
I do, but I don't require laying down.
So tell us your final thoughts as we wrap this up for now. And folks, remember, right after this, we'll take a quick break. And then in the 1 o'clock hour, we'll be joined by Professor Kimberly Crenshaw, who coined the term intersectionality, runs two amazing podcasts, and is a masterful storyteller whose insights into race in America will enlighten you all, as she has already done on the show once, and she has graciously agreed to come back. Dr. Pagnotta, over to you.
I just want to say thank you so much for having me on. It's been really an interesting and thought-provoking discussion with you here this morning. And I guess I would just leave off with where I started, in a way of, I think the most important thing right now that we can do on a personal level is to have compassion for ourselves and to honor whatever the emotional experience that we're having right now, whether that's anger, fear, uncertainty, sadness. In a way, I think all of these things have characterized the past 3 months. So the more that we can accept whatever is happening within ourselves and not fight against it or judge it, I think the better off we'll be to continue handling, you know, the situation that we're dealing with.
Thank you, Doc. I know you're not on social media publicly as a doctor. Are there other ways people can find you if they want to work with you, or do you prefer not to share?
I do have a professional Instagram account. If people would like to follow, it's at Dr. Gina, so at DrJeanna. So people are welcome to follow me there if interested.
And what are the kinds of things you post about?
So I mainly use that account to post about kind of digital mental health. So to your point earlier of what's important to know about social media, I take an approach of not to disregard social media, but rather to find a healthy and balanced way to have it in our lives. So a mix of that and then just general kind of mental health input and tips that I hope that can be of some help to people.
Thank you, Dr. Gina. And her name is Gina, but spelled J-E-A-N-N-A. D-R-J-E-A-N-N-A is her Instagram handle. You have a new follower in me, and I'm sure lots of other people as well. Folks, go to Instagram, D-R-J-E-A-N-N-A. And with that, we're going to say thank you and goodbye to Dr. Gina Pagnotta, psychologist, social media, and digital mental health expert from Brooklyn. And her website is drjeanna.com. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Stay well. Bye.
All right, folks. That was the first hour of our two-hour weekly show. We call it Coping with COVID-19. We'd love to continue to get your support, your listening, but you also need to call in and make a donation. Please go to WBAI.org and make a donation. Hit that donate button. You can donate in name of this show or any of your favorite shows and just support listener-supported progressive radio here in New York and around the world. We're going to take a break, and on the flip side, we're going to meet Professor Kimberly Crenshaw, who coined the term intersectionality and is going to give us some insights about everything that's been happening these last few days, a horrific week in America.
When the night has come and the land is dark and the moon is the only light we'll see. No, I won't be afraid. Oh, I won't be afraid. Just as long as you stand by.
Se me corta la respiración. Cuando tú me miras se me sube el corazón,
me palpita lento el corazón.
Y en un silencio tu mirada dice mil palabras. La noche en la que te suplico que no salga el sol.
Bailando.
Ya no puedo más,
ya no puedo más,
ya no puedo más,
ya no puedo más.
Yo quiero estar contigo, vivir contigo, bailar contigo, tener contigo una noche loca,
noche loca.
Ahí va a estar tu boca. Yo quiero estar contigo, vivir contigo, bailar contigo, tener contigo una noche loca, con tremenda nota.
Llevas otra dimensión.
Soy en otra dimensión.
Tus latidos aceleran a mi corazón.
Tus latidos aceleran a mi corazón.
Qué ironía del destino no poder tocarte, abrazarte y sentir la magia de tu olor.
Bailando.
That was the hit song from 2014, Bailando, which means dancing. And before that, we have the song Stand By Me, the classic hit by Benny King. At this time of what's happening, we are thinking about how we can stand by each other. And we have a very important hour for you. My name is Sri Srinivasan. I'm the host of Coping with COVID-19, a helpful, hopeful call-in show. And we want you to call in and talk to us today. We are feeling angry. We are upset. We are filled with resentment about what is happening in our country. It didn't start this week. It didn't start in the last few days. It's years and years of systemic oppression that has come to light and exploded into full view in front of the world. To help us in this next hour, to help guide all of us, including me, to provide her wonderful insights into what is happening, to help us understand the pain. We are joined right now by Professor Kimberly Crenshaw, who is an insightful writer, teacher, and sharer of important, influential information. Please welcome Professor Kimberly Crenshaw of Columbia Law School to our show. Hello, Professor.
Thanks for having me. Hi.
Thank you for being here. You were with us just a few weeks ago. I hoped you would come back many months from now. And here you are. You kindly agreed to our last minute invitation because as we feel the pain of this week, I had to talk to you, Professor. And thank you for accepting and thank you for being with us till 2 p.m. Eastern.
Yes. Well, thanks for giving me the opportunity to actually be part of a community. You know, the thing about this moment is, particularly for those of us who have to shelter in place, not being able to be in an expressive space with other people who are feeling the same pain that we are just doubles down on, you know, how tragic this moment is. So thank you for providing me this space.
Thank you. And everyone, and I mean everyone, please follow at Sandy Locks on Twitter. We had a nice exchange about the name Goldilocks, and she is Sandy Locks at Sandy Locks, S-A-N-D-Y-L-O-C-K-S. A little bit of background on her. She's a leading civil rights leader, teacher, expert on structural racial inequality, racism, black feminist legal theory. She coined the term intersectionality, which Merriam-Webster defines as the complex cumulative way in which the effects of multiple forms of discrimination, such as racism, sexism, and classism, combine, overlap, and intersect, especially in the experiences of marginalized individuals and groups. And she will be sharing her thoughts with us, but we want you to call in. We want you to talk to her. We want you to learn from her as I am learning from her. Please call our number. It's 212-209-2877. And Professor, you can hear in the background the soundtrack of New York City, the endless sirens. New York is always noisy. There are sirens all the time, but nothing like this as we hear siren after siren, a lot of them ambulances, in this epicenter of the crisis in America. How are you doing? We always ask our guests that. How are you doing, and how's your family?
Well, you know, as I mentioned at the top, it is frustrating, heartbreaking, isolating, not to be able to come together in a collectivity to express just how intolerable and outrageous this situation is right now. At the same time, I worry that this moment of legitimate expression of outrage is potentially being used, co-opted, mobilized to advance a very racist agenda. That worries me greatly. And I don't think that there is enough attention being placed on that possibility, particularly as we see a variety of elected officials and celebrities coming out to, you know, kind of scold protesters, but not necessarily acknowledging that some of the violence may well be, and there's reason to think, is associated with those who have been waiting for a moment like this. So that's got me very distressed. And I'm also distressed that at the same time that we are, you know, protesting and risking our lives to do so, we are dying. I mean, there's nothing that has happened that has reversed the march of this horrific disease, particularly through the black community. So, you know, there are these moments where you think it can't get worse. And I think that's where we were when I was on your show a couple weeks ago. And I worry whenever I say I think we've hit the bottom, because that's almost a guarantee that something worse is going to happen. So it, from this moment, I'm thinking, how can it get worse? And almost anything one can imagine seems possible right now. And that is what's weighing so heavily on my mind, and I'm sure many of your listeners as well.
And we'll be bringing in some of those callers in just a few minutes, folks. Please follow Professor Crenshaw. She is at Sandy Locks on Twitter. I'm at Sree on Twitter, S-R-E-E, and at WBAI. We're tweeting with the hashtag WBAI Sree, S-R-E-E. I just want to read you some names, Professor, and I'm going to try and read these names without breaking down. And as I read them, if you would, after I read them, just tell me how you feel as you hear them and what these names mean when we look back on America in this period of the early 21st century. Alton Sterling, Tamir Rice, Sandra Bland, Walter Scott, Freddie Gray. Philando Castile, Breonna Taylor, Eric Garner, George Floyd, Mike Brown, Trayvon Martin.
And let me add some too. India Kager, India Beatty, Tanisha Anderson, Natasha McKenna, Rekia Boyd. The list goes on. The list goes on. So, you know, so much of I think our experience, particularly of the videotape of George Floyd being murdered, is captured by the look on the officer's face who was murdering him. And it's a very familiar look. It's a look of the entertainment on one hand, complete disconnection with the fact that a body is under his knee. If you didn't know that picture of him was captured while he was sucking the life out of George Floyd, you would think that he had just bent over to pick up a set of keys, or he was just caught, you know, in a candid photo, right? You wouldn't know that he was actually killing a human being. And when I looked at that face, it reminded me of so many of the photos that I saw growing up of what lynch mobs looked like. You could find, you know, people dressed in crisp white, you know, shirts and hats and lighting cigarettes and just having a casual, leisurely day, pointing to something. You might think it was a bird in a tree, a balloon in the sky, and then you follow their finger to a picture of a human being hanging from a tree, often mutilated in the process. And this is just entertainment. This is just another day, another moment of the assertion of whiteness. And I think so much of what's happening now is that we are waking up in a new way to the reality that we think we have been separated from that history by many decades, and that it will never come back again. That these other moments are just exceptional moments. We have too many of them, but you know, we can still kind of go about our daily lives and be okay. But this is telling us something really different. That it's really a fantasy to think that we are protected as a people. That, you know, the very fact that this is happening, along with the fact that American society is opening up and there's nothing to arrest, the march of this disease, this is all a message of utter expendability. And I think we were in a fantasy for a long time, that those days were past and there were only moments of its echo, when now it might be that this is the main tune that we have to wake up to and realize this is the soundtrack of America.
That's so sad to just to I can kind of hear the defeat in your voice, Professor.
It's a very painful moment for everyone, and I'm feeling everyone's pain on that. And there's also frustration because it's not clear to me that there is a clear path that any party or any current elected official or want to be official is willing to put in motion to get us out of this. At worst, we have a president that is stoking precisely the sentiments that lead to Chauvin's sense that there was nothing he had to fear, to in taking this man's life on video. I mean, and in your face, these lives don't matter. Backed up by a president that effectively has said that members of neo-Nazi organizations also have very good people in them. So from the very top of government, there is, you know, white nationalism. And then on the other side, there is, you know, neoliberalism, but not the kind of robust repudiation of this legacy that is playing out. So let's take Amy Klobuchar, for example, leading contender for the vice presidency, who was the prosecutor during many of these cases in Minneapolis and Minnesota where black people have lost their lives. She hadn't seemed to find one that she could successfully prosecute. Now she's apologizing for not taking her responsibility seriously. But this is a contender for the party that many people support who are most victimized by police violence. So it is frustrating and quite frightening to be in this moment and not have a clear path away from this debacle. That's part of you know, the frustration that you probably hear in my voice.
Thank you for sharing that, and thank you for just being so real and authentic as you're talking here. I know a lot of our listeners want to talk to you, have questions for you. Folks, please dial in 212-209-2877. We are privileged to be with Professor Kimberly Crenshaw. She's on Twitter at Sandy Locks. I also want to tell her to share with us the podcasts she hosts, the forums she is now involved in, and other ways in which we can continue to learn from her beyond this show.
Well, thank you for that, Sri. We have been hosting a special series of our intersectionality podcast, and the series is called Under the Black Light, the Intersectional Failures that COVID Lays Bare. And in that series, we've been talking to activists, we've been talking to historians, we've been talking to policymakers, to media makers and followers about how all of the tragedies that are unfolding were preconditioned. In fact, one of our podcasts was basically framed as blackness as a precondition for COVID's ravaging impact. So we've been wanting to close the gap between those who look at this moment as the great leveler and the reality that it will never be the great leveler, given the fact that COVID hit a structure that was racially disparate from the beginning. And so the outcomes of this are in the death count that we're seeing disproportionately among African Americans, also disproportionately among Native Americans. We also talked about the conditions of work that make so many low-wage workers, workers of color, vulnerable to the disease. And most recently, we had Kiese Lehman on from Mississippi talking about what happens now that Mississippi is opening up. And the requirement seems to be that workers have to wear protective masks, but the people that they are serving don't wear masks to protect them. It's once again another moment in which certain workers are essential. So the state had to open up so people could go out and, you know, get their hair cut and their nails done and, you know, get their food cooked for them. That's essential. But protecting those workers who have to do that work for them, that's not essential enough to make, a mutual protection, you know, pact between them. So he talks about that as a continuation of servile humiliation, part of the long legacy of slavery in this country and low-wage work. So we do these regularly to try to bring people into conversation, provide a broader historical background from which to understand these issues. And this coming Wednesday, we're going to do another one on the unmattering of Black lives. We're going to have Alicia Garza on, who was one of the founders of Black Lives Matter, and Robin Kelly, a renowned historian, to help us put this into context. One of the mothers from Say Her Name to talk about the names that people don't talk about. Devin Carbato, who will talk about the way that law has made this possible. It's not so much that these cops are violating the law. They're exercising the authority that the law has given them. So much of the protest that needs to be happening now needs to be focused on the Supreme Court, other court and judicial decisions that basically allow the police to take our lives with little fear that they'll ever have to pay for it.
Thank you for sharing that. We want to get everyone to go to AAPF.org, which is the African American Policy Forum, and support you and the mission there and everything that's happening. Folks, we have an amazing 40 minutes left with Professor Kimberly Crenshaw. Please call in. Please share your comments. Please tweet us at Sree on Twitter, S-R-E-E at W-B-A-I. The hashtag is W-B-A-I-S-R-E-E. And please follow Sandy Locks on Twitter. A reminder, Professor, how you got Sandy Locks, because you were thinking about Goldilocks and Sandy Locks, right?
Yeah. I was one of those little Black girls who would read fairy tales and think, you know, I don't think I'm in this story. I don't think this is really made for me. So I think I kind of grew up with a sense of we're going to create our own characters, celebrate our own Black girlness, even though the fairy tale books didn't. So it's more or less a shout out to that little girl who wanted to invent her own narrative. So that's where Sandy Locks comes from.
And if you remember, when you were with us, my intern, who happens to be my 17-year-old son, was talking about how it could only be a white person would think of breaking into someone's home and trying all the chairs and trying all the porridge and trying all the beds and knowing she won't get shot. She won't get eaten by those bears.
Well, and maybe
we have to laugh because otherwise we'll cry.
Exactly. We have to cry. Laugh to not cry. You know, maybe we need to rename, you know, Goldilocks as Karen.
well, let's. I mean, this is, you know, we want to acknowledge the pain we're all going through, but it would be fair to say for people who cannot understand the depth of the pain that societies and cultures have always looked to laughter, even in the worst of times. We've seen during the Holocaust the role that humor played in keeping people alive in those concentration camps. We've seen how African Americans have used laughter and jokes, how Latinos have used jokes and laughter.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the first political quips that I ever understood as a kid was when my parents repeated the, you know, we went down to the Justice Department and all we saw was just us, right? That was like one that just sort of was, you know, you kind of remember the first time you got a kind of political joke. And that was one that my parents, you know, would often say. On our last webinar, we also had Viet Thanh Nguyen and Arundhati Roy, along with K.S.A. Lehman, and your listeners can find it. It was our ninth episode. And we wanted to turn to the storytellers to get a sense about how they are experiencing this moment. What is it that we can learn from them, since so much of politics is seeing what's wrong in the story that is prevailing and telling different stories, introducing different characters. So it was a real eye-opening conversation for us to have. But I think the most poignant thing that Chiesi again said was, you know, I'd asked him, one of the reviews of his book said that, you know, love is hard in the middle of, you know, so much lying. And I asked him, you know, what kind of lies is America telling itself now in the middle of this pandemic? And how is it making it hard for us to live? And he said, you know, I wake up every morning and ask myself, what kind of lie am I going to have to tell myself to get through the day? And it was one of those moments when you realize that actually you do have to, you do have to provisionally tell yourself a few lies. Like, your life isn't quite as precarious as it really is. Your country cares more about you than they really do. There are more limits on police's ability to take your life than there really are. So you kind of have to tell yourself all these lies just to kind of get through the day. And then you have these moments like Breonna Taylor, who sacrificed, you know, risked her own life to serve other people. She's an EMT in the middle of this pandemic, you know, a first responder. Clearly, her thought was that the main thing that she had to worry about was Corona killing her. Never in her wildest dreams would she think that police sworn to protect and serve her would knock down her door unannounced and end up shooting her 8 times. Now, I think a lot of people hear that story and want to figure out some way that they can tell themselves that wouldn't happen to me. You know, I'm not involved in this. I don't live here. I don't live there. But in reality, there is really not much that protects you from the police doing something like that, even on a mistaken warrant. And if there were to be something in place, it would have to look like consequences for that kind of error. But there were no consequences. These officers have not been arrested. They haven't been charged with anything. They haven't been fired. We don't even include them in the conversation. That's the kind of thing that I have to lie to myself about.
I'll
throw one more thing, and I'm anxious to hear what your listeners have to say. You know, I project myself into the crowd. I want to be there, but I also have to lie to myself to say that, you know, if something happened to me in an encounter with police, that as a woman, people would be as on the spot as they would be if I were a man. That's also a reality that I actually have to tell myself, even though I know it's probably, you know, not true. And so these are some of the painful realities of, you know, police brutality. You know, patriarchy framing police brutality in a certain way. So there's the fight against the principle thing, and then there's the fight against being marginalized and the fight against the principle thing. It's a lot of fight that we have to be involved in to really embrace a truly inclusive intersectional vision of social justice.
Thank you, Professor. I'm in a class with you right now. We're all in a class with you right now as we're learning and getting schooled on what we should be paying attention to. Thank you so much. We have about 25 minutes with you left. We want to get to some callers. We know people have been very patient. Thank you. You have a chance now to talk to Professor Kimberly Crenshaw. Because of the volume of calls, we're going to have to keep the comments very short and keep the question very short, please. Otherwise, we will have to cut you off because there's so many people calling in. So let's go to the lines. You're on the air on WBAI. Tell us your name, please.
My name is Ernest, and I'm from New Jersey. Thanks for taking my call, and I am listening to the professor. I'm 80 years of age, and I remember the 60s. And what is happening now, the virus has created a situation by which people are pushed so far back up against the wall. Two things. We've got one party, two factions, whether it's Democrats or Republicans, the same way the police and justice is handed down. Until the people realize and make sure that the police know that they are public servants and not the law. We will continue to have this situation. And until they start charging them and prosecuting them and sentencing them, because they always get off somehow or the other. Last point. What has happened? The society has got people in such a state of work, 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 pay the bill, pay the bill, pay the bill, that we can't afford to protest. The coronavirus has created a situation by which so many people were at home that they were able to take to the streets without worrying about, oh, I am not going to be earning any money, because they aren't anyway. Look at the stimulus situation. The people that are supposed to get it, the people that needs it most, are not going to get it, because the majority of people haven't paid file taxes for 2018. They know what they're doing. Thanks, and I'll take your response off there.
Go ahead, Professor, and thank you, caller.
I would just say, you know, pure wisdom, pure wisdom. I couldn't agree more. I would add that not only do the officers need to be prosecuted, they need to be convicted. And that's really the likelihood of any officer really ever getting convicted and sent away for serious time is almost nil. The one officer recently who did was a black officer who killed a white woman in Minnesota. And her family received $20 million, right? We don't see that very often at all. And even when it does, it quickly gets overturned. We saw that when a black woman who was killed, Rhonda Dormius' daughter, was killed in Maryland. They finally got a settlement of $34 million, and the judge overturned it. So even in the rare circumstance that happens, you know, Corinne Gaines was with her son, had a legally owned weapon, refused to let the police come in. She was streaming it on Facebook. Facebook turned the stream off, and as soon as they did, Royce Ruby went in and shotgunned her to death, even struck her infant son. That $34 million was overturned. So even in the rare occasion when you do get some kind of penalty, it's often overturned. So there's no disincentive, really. Mayors don't get voted out of office because of how many police shootings exist. Rarely do police chiefs lose their job. Rarely do officers. It's basically incentivizing doing this and disincentivizing punishing people for it. Till we can change that equation, that this is basically the life that we're going to live.
And that is so hard to imagine that this is the reality. Folks, you're listening to a conversation with Kimberly Crenshaw on WBAI Radio 99.5 FM, WBAI Worldwide, WBAI.org. We want you to support WBAI and the awesome team that puts all these shows together. I have it easy. I'm sitting on my apartment on the Upper West Side and able to call in and do this show. We have people who go into work every day, even in the midst of the very worst of this pandemic, going in there, pushing the buttons to make sure the station is on the air, making sure everything is clean, making sure that this content gets to you, the best news, information, music on WBAI. Please support us by going to WBAI.org and look for the donate button. You can also call a special number, 516-620-3602, and make a donation. But please support WBAI. We know it's hard when there is so much unemployment and so much economic pain, but you have to support shows and information that makes a difference, as we're seeing here. We have another caller. You're on the air on WBAI. talking to Professor Kimberly Crenshaw.
Good afternoon to you all. You can hear me, I think.
We can, thank you.
I'm sorry. Like I said, good afternoon. And also, my name is Arthur, and I'm 65, I guess, going after the fellow who just spoke and said he was 80. First thing I wanted to say was Just Us was Richard Pryor. I remember that. I remember that one very well. And I also want to say, too, unfortunately, I know what black rage is. I know what it's like to walk out of a precinct and want to go back with a machine gun and do a Lee Marvin Dirty Dozen. I know exactly how that feels. And I will tell you something. I know that there are people walking, you know, in be it Black Lives and all the other organizations that they didn't have when this stuff was kind of happening to me, and I have somewhat aged out, I guess, is what it seems like we're doing, if you know what I mean. Let's our younger people go through this, just like my father went through it. And what's happening is we got a president who is not doing dog whistles. He's out in the backyard hollering for old Yeller. Okay?
Bullhorn.
He's just coming right out and just saying it. And you have now organizations with the internet, and I do believe this, who are out there with these young, mostly black, but also many young white people who are looking for justice. They're mixing in with their own agenda. And they're doing things that they should not be doing. And unfortunately, certain stations like Fox News will get that and show that. And when they finish with it, it's look at what those people are doing. And our president, well, not our president, because I didn't vote for him, but him, he'll get up there and say what he repeated in the tweet yesterday, which was said to have come from a police captain in the Florida, I think, in the 1960s, that thing about if they start looting, start shooting. Mm-hmm. And he'll deny it had nothing at all to do with it when everybody knows. Because he is talking to that base. And I'm not talking about people who may have disagreed with Obama's policies and may disagree. He's talking to that base of people who never liked the fact that Obama got in there in the first place. And there was a black family in that White House. So their feeling is, and they see that young man laying on the ground and the cop with his knee on it, what did he do to get him? In other words, we caused it. Everything that happens to us, we caused it. And if there was any justice at all, the first thing they need to do, too, is San Francisco need to offer Mr. Colin Kaepernick, I can't even pronounce his name, but the brother who's the football player.
Kaepernick.
Offer that young man his job back and give him back pay. Because if ever there was a reason for athletes, black athletes, to turn around and take a knee, don't tell me this ain't it now. That's all I wanted to say, and I will shut up and let someone else talk. You take care. Yep. My best.
Thank you for your call, and I hope you'll be a regular caller and listener to this show. We want to hear your voice again. Thank you for sharing it, and you're absolutely right. You were referring when the looting starts, the shooting starts, is based on a racist white police chief in the 60s in Miami who used that and said that let them accuse me of police brutality, I don't care. And for the president to pretend to lie after everything that he was not talking about that is yet another lie, but it has all been normalized. I keep saying, Professor Crenshaw, to everyone who voted for President Trump, everyone who supported him only for the good tax rules that they got, or like his policy about the border, or whatever the reason, I'm saying to you now, come get your boy. He is yours. You own him and everything he says that comes out of his mouth. And you can hear my anger, Professor.
And I'm sure it's shared with many people. I mean, that is what's so insidious about these messages. You know, it's sort of the wink to the group that he's trying to curry favor with and incite. I mean, you know, let's think about it. His refusal to wear a mask and his incitement of these right wingers to march on capitals with guns not only causes the virus to spread, but aggressively doing so, right? So his very actions will lead to the death of people. I mean, just straight up. And this is through the virus, right? So if people are following him, thinking that, you know, well, the president, you know, is encouraging us, you know, to pursue this strategy with respect to, you know, protesting, you know, COVID protection, what do we think his tweeting when the looting starts, the shooting starts, is encouraging people to do? I mean, just think about it. We see what he encourages people to do. We see the success of it. So when we hear, you know, shots fired, do we really not think for a moment that maybe that's not protesters shooting each other? Do we think about that? The attorney general from Minnesota, Keith Ellison, said on MSNBC earlier that the majority of the arrestees and many of the plates are from out of state. Many people are coming out of state to participate in this. People know more about what's going on in the right wing. There is a movement to try to create maximum chaos in order to create the conditions for greater polarization and potentially a race war. Russia has, according to intelligence officers, has doubled down on its efforts to sow maximum discord in the United States through America's most significant weakness, and that's race. So be critical, be mindful of some of the things that we're seeing, because it's according to, you know, a strategy that has already been in play and is underway.
Thank you, Professor. We have a few minutes left with you, and we have multiple callers. Folks, please keep the questions or comments short so that we can hear more from Professor Crenshaw. You're on the air, WBAI caller. Tell us your name, please.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm calling. My name is Tito. I'm calling from Agana, Guam in the Pacific.
Hello, our furthest caller yet. We had a caller from Hawaii the very first day, but now you've beaten that by going out to Guam.
Oh, I see. No, what's going on in Guam is also a lot of protests going on, and it was turning over police cars and burning the American flag. So mm-hmm. Things are very intense in Guam as well. You know, you also have Duterte in the Philippines. This is really Trump Jr.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is that this struggle, I think, is global. And also Guam is, you know, it's a U.S. trusteeship island, which is basically just another word for colonialism.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So we hear very little about what's going on in the Pacific, but, you know, the struggles go on there. I know there's a general strike going on in Pongo Pongo, American Samoa. So we don't hear things like that.
Tito, thank you so much. I went to high school in Fiji, and I know how remote that part of the world is. And we don't hear enough in America about a lot of places in the world, and certainly even among our so-called territories. As you know, we didn't even hear enough about Puerto Rico. And when the president went to Puerto Rico and threw those paper towels, you knew what he was thinking of the folks there. Professor Crenshaw, this is a global struggle. Duterte.
It is a global struggle.
You can name all of the people who are Trump Jr. Some of them are Trump seniors. Yes. Bolsonaro. You can imagine all those names.
And Modi in India. You know, it's around the world. I mean, let's recognize, you know, when the U.S. Backs up authoritarian regimes elsewhere, it bolsters authoritarianism here. So this is a global phenomenon, and I appreciate your caller sharing that. I know you have a lot of callers, so
let's keep going. Yes,
listen to three or four of the calls, and then comment at the end if that That okay, gets more callers.
We should do that too. Thank you, Professor. Look at you. You're schooling me on my how to do this too.
No,
you're
an expert. I know that I've been talking too long, so I want to let your callers.
You know what you're doing. I'm a newbie in all this. Thank you very much, Professor. Let's go to another caller. You're on the air with Kimberly Crenshaw.
Hello?
Hi. Tell us your name, please, where you're calling from.
Oh, me? Oh, okay. My name is Gina in Manhattan. Hello. In respect to you and the professor, Columbia University. I guess what I want to say briefly is that when you see these shootings, you also got to look at the society as a whole. And we deal a lot with separation, things that belong together that are separate. For example, health in your body, education, spirituality. All these things are separate. So we're also separate from justice. Those people that did the shooting are separate from knowing that they're going to have a heavy consequence. They know that in the past, they've been able to get away with it pretty much. So they're not separate from a heavy consequence. And there's a lot of things going on that's keeping people in Harlem, for example, separate. Universities are very powerful real estate-wise, and they have a lot of the money, and they take a lot of the land. You know, I understand Columbia, much respect, but that's a powerful university. NYU, powerful university. And there's a lot of displacement in New York and probably other cities that causes a displacement in people's minds. So it may be hard to focus, to put things together, to have a sustained response when they see things that reflect a separation, like these killings. But you're right, we do have to keep them in our mind somehow. Could your professor, who I respect, give us some reflections or some more reflections? We got to separate. We got to look at what things are separate in this whole society and look at dealing with those people that shoot. What are they separate from, and what do they need to be brought together on, and what do they reflect of this whole society? Because there's a lot wrong here. Thank you very much.
Thank you, caller. We're going to go to another caller, and then we're going to go to Professor Crenshaw. You're on the air with WBAI.
Yes, hello. My name is Brother B, and I'm calling from the Bronx. What I want to say is what amazes me the most is that people don't seem to recognize it's the system that we live under, which is the problem. We live in a racist, satanic, decadent system that oppresses people, poor people, primarily black people, on a global level. Okay? It doesn't matter who's going to become president. Okay? You were just saying about what Trump said about when they start looting, start shooting. People seem to forget that in Baltimore, during the year 2015, I think it was, when Freddie Gray was murdered, and the black people, and I don't call it looting, by the way, I consider this what's happening now an uprising, not a looting. But like I'm saying, Obama said similar things when the people in Baltimore were upset at the murder of Freddie Gray. He called them thugs and all of that type of stuff, the same thing that Trump is now doing. So, sadly, Obama was a fraud, as far as I'm concerned, and it doesn't make any difference as to whom they're going to make the next president. This system is evil. It needs to be taken down, and whatever good that we have in this system should be removed, and we need a whole new paradigm. The last thing I want to say is Malcolm X, our great brother, our shining prince, he said, when they say democracy, it's hypocrisy. And I'll leave it there. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Brother B from the Bronx. I think we have one more caller. If we have one more caller,
Brother B was actually the last caller.
Thank you very much. And a big shout out to Giovanni, our producer and engineer, who is an example of the great dedication of our staff at WBAI. Everyone, please support us, WBAI.org/donate. We only have couple of minutes left with Professor Crenshaw. If you could please give us your thoughts on some of the questions that came in, and then reflect with us on this moment. And also, if you can, please help us get through this week. Give us some guidance as we go out into the rest of this weekend and this week for us, please. Thank you, Professor.
Well, yeah, on the guidance, it's, you know, in a way, it goes back to what Chiesa Lehman says. We have to get up each morning and, you know, really tell ourselves something, and that something may not yet be true. It may be an aspirational truth, but not a current truth. I fully agree with, you know, much of what both your callers said, that yes, this is, you know, a system that separates and distinguishes parts of a whole to the detriment of us all, mind and body. You know, it's just sort of a central piece of a advanced capitalist system, and we see some of the consequences of it. A person from her community. So, yeah, the bigger picture always has to be front and center of how we go about thinking about what change has to look like. I think it's been such a long time since we actually were able to talk about radical rethinking of the conditions of our lives, that we've kind of lost the ability to talk about that in much of at least mainstream discourse. Some part of it I do attribute to the fact that we had this period of time where people like to think we were post-racial simply because we had a black president in the White House. Really, the only thing that changed was we lost the only black senator we had. We didn't become a post-racial society just because that glass ceiling was broken. But what that did do was arrest for some period of time the capacity to actually talk about structural racism, to actually continue to agitate too many people associated black faces in high places with racial justice. However you feel about Obama, whether, you know, he was a great, great president to you or disappointment, the reality is that you always need to agitate in a society that is constructed in the way ours is. So I think it's a reminder that, you know, in this next couple of months, I think we're going to see political violence. I think we're going to see efforts to suppress the black vote like never before. I think we're going to see the Democrats flounder to try to figure out how they're going to respond to this moment. I hope it pushes them in a far more progressive direction than they've been. I won't hold my breath. But it's a hope that I have. It's a thing that I get up in the morning and probably lie to myself about. When I think about moving forward, what I hope is that this moment is one that has legs. And to make it so, we have to be able to say names. So I offered some additional names of people killed by the police. I want to offer some names that people don't know. So everybody knows Amy Cooper for what she almost did in Central Park. But people don't know the names of Jonathan Mattingly, Brett Hankinson, and Miles Cosgrove. These are the cops that went into the apartment and took Breonna Taylor's life. So if you're upset, and rightly so, about Amy, you should be furious about Jonathan, Brett, and Miles. They should be on our tongues. So I guess I leave by asking particularly our listeners who don't necessarily fear their lives being taken by police in the way we do, to ask yourselves, who are you in that scenario? Are you the person filming, recording, bearing witness, saying what it is you're seeing? Or are you, you know, Tao Tao, who stood there and just watched it happen, or Thomas Lane, or Alexander Kim, who actually held him down? Who are you in this moment? Ask yourselves that and act on it accordingly. If you don't like what you're seeing in the mirror, then be these people who bear witness.
Thank you, Professor Crenshaw, preaching to us all, and we are listening and learning. Thank you for an amazing hour, Professor. Please follow her. She's at Sandy Locks on Twitter. I want to add a couple of other names. Botham Jean, who was shot dead in his own apartment, just having a meal. Calvin Munerlin, who was a security guard just enforcing the social distancing laws and guidelines that this president's own administration is pushing, and somebody shot him to death. He was a security guard at a dollar store. The list goes on and on and on, and the pain goes on. We will be back again next Saturday, noon to 2 p.m. Eastern. We hope you will make us a habit, as you have of WBAI. We hope you will join us as we talk about the different aspects of COVID-19 and as we continue to focus on the pain of COVID-19 and all its parts. You can find me on email, sri@sri.net, and please follow my other shows on YouTube. SriNet, SreeNet is my YouTube account, SriNet. And we're going to leave you right now with a song, one of my favorite songs, Could You Be Loved, by Bob Marley. This is a ballad to the poor yet welcoming people Bob met in Brazil. Thank you for listening to our show, for supporting WBAI. If you have to go out to work, thank you, thank you, thank you. And Professor Crenshaw, you rock. Thank you.
After the Pandemic with journalist and author Chris Hedges, Saturday, May 30th at 3 p.m. on WBAI and at 2 p.m. on our sister station in Houston, Texas, KPFT. Hedges is the author of 12 books, most recently America, the Farewell Tour. For nearly two decades, he's been decrying the corporate coup d'etat that has taken place in the U.S. After his talk, he'll be in conversation with Margaret Kimberly. She's Black Agenda Report editor and senior columnist. She's a New York-based peace and justice writer and activist, author of Prejudicial, Black America, and the Presidents. It's followed by a Zoom town hall on the Pacifica YouTube channel. That's What's Next After the Pandemic, broadcast 3 p.m. Saturday, May 30th on WBAI New York and at 2 p.m. on KPFT Houston.
Hi, this is DJ Baby K from The Sweet Spot. On the go, but want to support the station dedicated to you, the listener? No problem. Simply dial 41444 and text transmit 995 to make a pledge by text. Support WBAI's unique voice and keep us on the air during this critical time. Once again, dial 41444 and text transmit 995 to make your pledge. Thanks for supporting listener-sponsored community radio, WBAI 99.5 FM.
Gerstein, Inc. Helping nonprofits is what we do. Nonprofits are working in overdrive to respond to the pandemic. They're running homeless shelters, providing health and mental health services, caring for kids in foster care and homebound seniors and those who are hungry, and much more. They're also delivering educational, entertaining content straight to our homes, and they're doing it all with less. So let's come together to support nonprofits today. Look for the hashtag #SupportNonprofits on social media to learn more.
Hello, I'm Isaac Ferguson. I'm inviting you to tune in on Saturday, 4 to 6 p.m. for Caribbean Voices and Beyond, when we will bring you news, views, and important issues affecting the Caribbean community in particular and the immigrant community in general. Tune in 4 to 6 p.m.